This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media Medical News Network. We're about to speak to Bernard Siegel, who's the executive director of the Genetics Policy Institute. Welcome back to Utopia Media Medical News Network.
Thank you very much.
We're here to talk about the event that your group organized over this last weekend in Houston. What was the exact title of that meeting, that conference?
It was the Stem Cell Policy and Advocacy Summit, Sustaining the Mandate for Cures.
Okay, and who were some of the people who attended? And how many members attended overall?
We had about 175 people attend this event. Many of them were leaders of what I call the stem cell constituency. We had leaders of patient advocacy organizations. We had stem cell activists, some leaders in the business community, many, many academics, scholars, scientists attending this event, folks that want to see regenerative medicine advance.
Okay, and it was mainly in the form of keynotes and panels, or what was the format?
That's it. It was. It was in keynotes and panels. Of course, I think some of the most valuable things happened during the breaks and the dinners and this sort of thing, because it was a community-building event.
Okay, why don't you talk about that a little bit? From what you know, what kind of community networking took place, and is there anything important to announce about that, or is it just more by way of further solidifying the community of people who are advocating for stem cell research?
Well, I think when you look at what we were trying to accomplish, we're trying to create a larger sense of community and to unify a movement. Last May, just this last, a month ago, the state of Indiana decided to ban somatic cell nuclear transfer. Even though other states, the patient groups are rallying, scientists are rallying to fight this sort of draconian legislation, there was no tripwire to really help this cause or to rally the cause in Indiana. Where were the patient groups there? And clearly there are plenty of people there that would not want to see vital stem cell research banned or criminalized in that state. So there was this unmet need where our community really needs to organize itself in order to combat the foes of the research. So this was an opportunity. It was really rather historic, I think, to bring in all of these stakeholders in one place, right in Houston, Texas, at a very prestigious medical school that was the venue and co-host, which was Baylor College of Medicine, where we could see if we could get our movement on the same book and page. And I think we really accomplished a lot and took steps to do so, and there were a lot of concrete things that happened as a result of this.
Okay, so this is pretty much a political organizing event rather than an event for the exchange of the latest information about the science of stem cell research.
No, I wouldn't characterize it as only a political event at all. It was much more than that. It was to exchange information. We brought in some of those prominent stem cell researchers in the world.
Who are some of the people who spoke?
Absolutely. Dr. Woo-Suk Wong came in from Korea, especially to come to this event, gave a riveting account of his very elegant and profound breakthrough in research in creating therapeutically cloned stem cell lines from patients' donor cells. And the audience was really just it was gripping and exciting to hear this. And because, you know, for years we've been fighting for this type of research, but doing it in the abstract. Now here it is that's actually been shown that it can be accomplished. So this was very exciting to all of the participants at the summit meeting.
Let me ask you two specific things about Dr. Huang's research. I've read it cost $200,000 to do what he did. Is that about right?
I don't know what it costs to do that, and I would be surprised if that's all it cost. You have to understand that the government of Korea has made a major investment in regenerative medicine. Unlike the United States, they have made this a priority. So he has the top-flight stem cell labs in the entire country. Is unified in purpose with a plan to advance this research.
Okay, let me ask about the follow-up. He then has pretty much solved the problem, which was, in my understanding, was going to be sort of the second step in the stem cell process. One would be to just work with excess embryos to refine the process
from in vitro fertilization.
From in vitro fertilization, right? To refine the process of getting the stem cells. And the next step would be the somatic cell nuclear transfer process that he's apparently, if not perfected, at least enhanced to the point where it can be replicated fairly routinely. The next step, as I understand it, is to study how these newly created stem cells from somatic cell nuclear transfer can be shepherded in the direction of becoming nerve cells, heart cells, muscle cell, pancreatic cells, and so on. Is that what the next step is? And did he give any hints about whether he's going to be doing that, whether he's going to be working with other stem cell researchers around the world to do that, or where the process and the evolution of the stem cell research is right now?
Well, I think that was a very accurate description of what he has done, and of course now they're trying to differentiate, as you said, differentiate these cells into the types of body tissues that we all have. The entire stem cell community in Korea, they're doing it at different universities such as Seoul National University, Pochonsha University, and others, are all working in tandem on different areas to actually accomplish this, including in the fields of diabetes and Parkinson's and such. So it's all going to move forward. And I think it's also very significant that Dr. Wong has announced that Korea is going to set up a stem cell bank for the world and also is seeking collaborations with other institutions. He announced recently that he was going to do one with Sloan Kettering, and it was very exciting and a concrete accomplishment of the summit conference that not only did the Baylor College of Medicine announce the formation of a stem cell institute, but that they were going to collaborate with Dr. Wong. And none of this, I think, would have happened, or at least not very soon, if it weren't for the summit conference.
Talk a little bit more about that collaboration in general. I've read that the person who created DALI at the Roslin Institute is working with Dr. Wang to provide him with some somatic cells from a person suffering from what the British call a motor neuron disease, which I think here is called Lou Gehrig's disease, to essentially take a cell from a person who has that disease, send it to Dr. Huang, who will then use it in his process of creating a line of stem cells based on that initial somatic cell. Was that discussed? Are there any other efforts underway that you know about to internationalize and divide up the labor around the world to speed up the process?
Well, I would say that there's much to commend Dr. Wong and his approach. I mean, he is trying to take a leadership position in this and is doing it successfully, and it's offered to do these collaborations. I really can't comment on the details of one piece of scientific research or another, because I'm not a scientist, but from everything that I've seen and in talking directly to Dr. Wong, he is dedicated, if not driven, to advancing this research as quickly as possible. Of course, a breakthrough of efficacy of the research 10 times in a matter of 16 months, so we can only hope that the increase continues. I mean, Dr. Schotten said this has brought this decades sooner.
Dr. Schotten is who exactly?
Dr. Gerald Schotten of the University of Pittsburgh is the American collaborator with Dr. Wong on his most recent research, and Dr. Schotten also attended the summit conference.
Now, does this breakthrough in Korea mean, do you understand it to mean, that the technology that was used there is now going to be available to Dr. Schotten in the U.S. and to other researchers in the U.S.? Are the Koreans going to hold on to this technology, is it really a technology or just really good workers who are able to use the existing technology in a way that enhances the results?
Well, I would say that the Koreans have developed a technique of being able to harvest these cells that no one else had tried, and it is very much, they have very skilled technicians. I think it's been said quite a bit, and I actually observed this when I was in Korea. You know, their labs are open 24/7. There's no Saturday, there's no Sunday, there's no 7 p.m. and everyone goes home. There are shifts that come in. They are absolutely driven to advancing this. It's astonishing to see. so you can't help but think that the future is in Asia, and it's also very frustrating to think that we have these incredible institutions of research in the United States, and if this is the breakthrough that's going to lead to cures, that we might be on the sidelines and not being able to use the best equipment, the best buildings, the best scientists that we have in our country to do this.
Well, what's that going to mean exactly, both for the progress of the research and for the competitive position of U.S. biomedicine?
Well, I think it's very significant because if regenerative medicine, as I believe it will, and many experts are saying, is the medical breakthrough of our lifetime, and stem cell research at the vanguard of this, that rather than drugs and rather than surgery, that you're going to be able to use cells to repair and replace body organs and tissue and damaged tissue, then it is very significant because it's almost like seeing a baton passed to another country on this. Now, what was significant, very significant about the summit and symbolic, is the summit was opened by an opening address by Dr. Michael E. DeBakey. And Dr. DeBakey is perhaps the greatest surgeon of the 20th century and, you know, a developer of the heart pump, just a revolutionary doctor. And he's 97 years old, and he gave the opening address. And in that same day, Dr. Wong, who's, you know, one day he might win the Nobel Prize, you know, with this incredible breakthrough that he's had. So I think there was a lot of symbolism in this particular meeting of the old meeting the new, and the old endorsing the new.
Well, does that process imply that the focus of advanced stem cell research is going to be in Korea, or that again is this technology and the technique going to be diffused to the Roslin Institute, to universities in the U.S., to the Stanford and Harvard and other research centers who are working on this,
or is
everything going to feed out of Korea?
No, I don't think everything is going to feed in and out of Korea. I think this will become an accepted technique, and it's going to go forward. And I think this type of research will advance in the United States in some places. In other places, sadly, it will not.
Okay, let's focus in the last few minutes here on how it's likely to take. This is likely to happen in the United States. You've referred to the period that we're in now as the post-Proposition 71 period. That refers to the ballot measure in California last November that authorized $3 billion for embryonic stem cell research. What was the feeling at the conference about where things stand on Proposition 71 right now, which the last time we reported on it was tied up in litigation?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of optimism for Proposition 71. And the thought is this litigation are just stumbling blocks being placed in the way by the foes of the research. It's very unfortunate, but this is what it is. The voters voted in a mandate, like 59%, for this California Institute of Regenerative Medicine to go forward and these bonds to be issued. But we have to fight the political battle. And the foes of the research are very well organized, and they're going to do what they can to derail this and defer the dream and defer defer the money and the scientists doing the work.
How important is the delay in mobilizing the Proposition 71 money vis-a-vis what's happening in Korea and, to a lesser extent, I think, in the UK in terms of where the leadership of this process is going to reside?
I think that short term, it's a stumbling block and it's difficult. Long term, all of this research one day will go forward. It will go forward in the United States. It's going to go forward around the world. It's significant because if you view all the suffering of man and all the as a burning building, and you have a fire hydrant next going drip drip drip, and you can't turn on full throttle to put out the fire. That's the problem we have, and that's the problem we have in the United States.
Okay, let's shift the focus from California to Washington, D.C. The House of Representatives, sometimes considered the more conservative of the two houses of the U.S. Congress, passed a bill a few weeks ago authorizing federal funding for the creation of stem cell lines from excess in vitro fertilized embryos, of which there are reportedly 400,000 in the United States right now. The Senate hasn't dealt with it. The President of the United States has said he will exercise his veto for the first time if the Senate passes it. What was the consensus or the feeling or anything expressed about the situation vis-a-vis that bill in the Congress in Washington?
Well, you know, I think if I looked in the crystal ball, my prediction would be sometime in July this will come to a vote in the Senate, it will pass, and sometime shortly thereafter President Bush will veto it.
Right.
I think.
Did the people there feel that there were enough votes in favor of it in the House and Senate to override the veto?
I don't know if there was a feeling expressed. I didn't hear anything other than what the press has speculated, that while there might be enough votes in the Senate, there would not be enough votes in the House to overturn the veto.
Okay, now there's another bill that's sponsored by about a half a dozen U.S. senators that would, in fact, legalize but not fund somatic cell nuclear transfer. Is that right?
Yes, and regulate it.
What's the status of that if it's not going to be possible to get what seems to me a lesser level of federal approval for the stem cell research project? Is there any chance that that bill will go anywhere?
I think that, and also the Brownback bill that calls for the criminalization of somatic cell nuclear transfer, where they would put researchers and patients in jail with very heavy fines and jail time. I think both are going to be tied up in committee, probably will not go forward, and we will continue with this crazy quilt pattern and confused pattern in the United States of STEM states coming in and trying to regulate this, other states trying to ban it, and other states not having no decision or not doing anything with it. And here's the problem. The problem is it cannot flourish in political uncertainty. And this serves as a cloud over the research, and it serves as a deterrent to investment in this field. It hamstrings U.S. researchers. So that's a problem.
Okay, what kind of plans or commitment were made by the attendees of this group in terms of public education and political organizing to convince the public and the decision makers to move in the direction that they'd like to see?
Sure. The consensus is that we must go forward and educate. The American public, the more they know, the more they support this research. And it's really just a determined minority that does not want this to go forward. When people realize that their lives and the lives of their loved ones are at stake by this, it starts to take on new significance. They look at this issue a lot harder, and they realize those cells in the dish are not human beings. They're not human beings. They are cells in a dish that can stay there a million years, and they're still going to be cells in a dish, and that's the way it is. So there's a determination to go forward, to educate, to create forums, to have meetings, to rally, and to really make this work. We're calling this the Pro-Cures Coalition. We are pro-cures. It's a pro-cures movement, and I think that's one of the major things that came out of this summit.
Okay, I want to thank you for talking to us today on the Utopia Media Medical News Network about what happened, and I hope we can stay in touch and continue to get your views on and information from you about what's going on in the world of stem cell research.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.